Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
I don't think you got the message. I found your ass in the gutter with nothing. I'm leaving your ass in the gutter with nothing. Go to the bathroom and don't come back.
Help me, Dan, please. I can't take it anymore.
Yes, indeed. It's Anger Management Friday. That's what we've christened it. City Limits came up with a special opening. And I think the rationale here is let's get some anger out before our weekend start. So we're going to lead every Friday with a rant from Paul and I. And then today, as an extra special bonus, we're going to piss all of you off too. Paul, may I go first with my rant this morning?
Yes, absolutely. And good morning.
Good morning. Do we even say good morning on Anger Management Friday, or are we all just angry?
Bad morning to you.
Bad morning to you. And a bad morning to IT back there. And why does Crowley have it so hot in here? Did anybody not tell him that it's hot outside? He's got the thing at 74. I think he turns it up right before he leaves just to, well, make me angry.
And Callis didn't leave the fan running or was not running the fan at all back here either.
All right. Very short rants from Paul and I to kick off today. Mine is on J.J. Redick. Are you freaking kidding me with this guy? What? Why is he a head coach in the NBA? Because he's LeBron's broadcast partner? He's never won anything. He's never been associated with winning a championship in the NBA. He's never coached. He's never coached as a head coach, as an assistant coach. I don't even know if he's been an elementary school coach, a travel. I don't know what he's done. He's done nothing. He's hired. This is the single most ridiculous coaching hire I have ever seen in pro sports. He's being hired because he's LeBron's broadcast partner. So you tell me how he walks in front of the team and delivers any kind of message that at least half the guys are telling themselves that's what LeBron wants. That's his buddy. That's the guy he's on a podcast with. Or Rich Paul, who I think is the agent for both guys. This is a joke, Paul. At least I honestly thought it was when I saw it on social media, even though it had been rumored. This is the silliest coaching hire I've ever seen. And what makes me really angry is I feel like this is going to be a trend moving forward. I feel like this is just the beginning. And I get it that stars get their way in pro sports. You can go back to Lakers, you can go back to Magic, having influence with coaches. But he wasn't going out and hiring his business partners. That's what this is. It's ridiculous. And that's where I begin today. The floor is yours.
I would say also the other part of that is J.J. Redick is only being hired to be a yes man. So I don't even know how much he's going to actually coach. Anyway, I'm going to give my anger to the Penguins.
All right, let's go.
Maybe I'm just way overreacting to this idea that, you know, that they re-signed Nedeljkovic, okay? But I think that what we've seen so far, one thing that we have seen so far for the Penguins in this offseason is that it's going to be more of the same. Give us more of the same. Bring back the band. We're close. At the end of the year, we were close. Everybody in the league was afraid of us. If we'd have played the Rangers, we'd have beat them in five. So far in this offseason, after missing the playoffs for 2 years in a row and not winning a playoff series since 2018, the big moves are, checks notes, fired one of your assistant coaches, and then you hired the best friend, you know, the head coach.
J.J. Redick. They hired J.J. Redick.
And then you hired one of the head coach's best friends to replace him. Then the goalie that you, you know, basically got some really good play for a while, now you're going to give him a two-year deal, even though his career suggests that that little two-month or two-and-a-half-month burst what he had was a complete and utter outlier. How do I know that? Because in his last six games, he gave up like 24 goals. In five of those six games, his save percentage was under 900. So, a guy who wasn't playing good at the end of the season, which, oh, by the way, you needed to win a bunch of games down the stretch. A guy whose career suggests he's not that good. But again, I digress. All I'm saying is this. Maybe, you know, if you're signing him and there's a bunch of other moves coming and they're going to get rid of Jari and bring in somebody else and he's your backup, I can live with that. I can't live with the fact that it seems like, Joe, we are headed down the same path we've been headed down for, what, four or five off seasons now. Bring the man back. Bring them all back. We've got stars. Never mind that they're 87 years old. We've got stars. So we're going to make the playoffs. And when we do, oh, boy, everyone is shaking in their skates about us. Every single team. Florida, Edmonton, got nothing on us. We got Ned. We got Ned for two more years. Anyway.
Thank you, Paul.
I had to get that off my chest.
I think you did a good job of that. Limits, would you like to rant or just let this go here?
Well, I'm actually pretty happy today.
All right, then counterbalance us with a happy rant.
Ooh, a happy rant.
Tell us why you're happy. He doesn't know why he's happy, Paul. That's why I say he is like a hummingbird. He can't even help being happy.
Well,
this guy's never been angry.
No,
have you
I've
ever
been
broken?
Oh,
have you
yeah,
ever broken
angry.
Something in anger? In anger,
I throw when I pitch in wiffle ball and I give up home runs. I throw my phone against the ground constantly, and I need to. I did that with my new phone, and I was like, I probably shouldn't be doing that anymore.
But isn't that a statement in and of itself that your angriest moments in life occur during wiffle ball league games?
Everybody gets angry, Joe. Like, I'm not like somebody tramples on your flowers or somebody ruins your nice shirt you like or somebody does something really maddening towards you.
Right.
Yeah, I'm going to yell at them.
Are you?
Like, I'm not going to say, that's okay, and wilt like a flower, you know, just roll over and die.
You're a human hummingbird, I often say. You're hovering around happily, and I think that's a compliment.
I think that's how you should try to live life. You know, don't be angered and upset and frustrating.
Exactly.
As Malzy sometimes can be.
Right.
Not to take a shot at Malzy. We love Malzy, but...
Sure we do.
Can be very down and depressing sometimes.
Malzy can?
Yeah, I think so.
Do you
so.
Think of him that right. way, Paul?
Yeah, I mean, what do they call it? Self...
Loathing?
Yes.
Yeah, that's actually a good point.
Yeah, he takes a lot of shots at himself. And I'm like,
well, guess what? Now we can make everyone else angry. With the Willie Mays news the other day, we innocently went to a topic because it seemed like a good day for it on Mount Rushmore's. Like, because Willie Mays, is he on that for baseball? And when we went to the Pittsburgh one, you know, what are you doing this for? Why are you going to Mount Rushmore? This is the most cliched topic of all time. Why are you talking about this? All right, then let's really dig in here, and let's go to the most cliched topics in Pittsburgh sports radio history. You ready, Paul?
Yes.
Let's do this. Where do you want to start? I'll give you a choice. Cower versus Tomlin, Ben versus Bradshaw, favorite sports movies, or was Joe Flacco elite? City Limits, where would you like to start?
Let's do favorite sports movies. Let's start off with
all right. Let's do favorite sports movies, Paul. You got one to watch. You got one to take with you to a desert island. What is it?
Wow.
You like that one?
Yes. One sports movie to take to a desert island.
Yep.
Is poker a sport?
Hell yeah.
Rounders.
Oh, is that a great movie?
that's an easy one for me. Some people want to argue with me that poker isn't a sport, which I could have done a rant on that because poker is a sport. But being that we are designated in saying that poker is definitely a sport, Rounders. Followed closely by the Cincinnati Kid, but probably Rounders. Definitely Rounders.
Rounders, to me, is one of the great addiction movies of all time, too.
Yes.
I mean, it's just, he can't control, it's Matt Damon, right? He can't control himself.
No, well, Edward Norton is the guy.
Edward Norton, yes.
Matt Damon is the guy who actually is trying to do it right and be responsible, and he's always felt guilty, because remember him and Ed Norton got into trouble, and Edward Norton didn't rat him out.
Yeah.
Edward Norton ended up going away, and so Matt Damon always felt like responsible.
Wait, yeah. Isn't Matt Damon in an addiction movie, too? Where's he hugging Robin Williams at the end of the movie?
Good Will Hunting?
Good Will Hunting.
Fantastic movie.
Fantastic movie. And I don't care that it's not sports, and I hope that makes people angry.
Oh, Joe, I know what I'm mad about now.
What?
Twitter is now going ablaze. The Pirates have made a move with their jerseys.
Oh, God, what?
The Pirates will now have a Sheetz patch on their jerseys, the team announced on the scoreboard at PNC Park right now. An official jersey sponsor patch is coming to the team's jerseys.
And it's Sheetz?
And it's Sheetz.
This is tremendous, Paul.
I love Sheetz.
On our way to Cedarbrook,
yeah,
there's a Sheetz, and I always get ready there. The last time we played there, I stopped for a giant coffee, an apple fritter, had the biggest blowout since game one of the 1986 NBA Finals, and I was ready to go.
Keep the jerseys plain.
No
advertisements on the jerseys.
Oh, what are you?
Keep
the old curmudgeon?
It's baseball.
Sounds like a 90-year-old,
you
Paul.
That's something I'm supposed to say.
Yeah, eventually these
jerseys are going to end up looking like soccer jerseys.
Good.
Very small little logo in the corner,
good,
and then Best Buy on the front of the jersey, just like soccer
Maybe
does.
It'll help them go out and buy a player. Sell all the patches you can. Have patches from head to toe.
It makes no difference, like, whatsoever in terms of anything, but just, I just don't like the fact that, you know, baseball is such a traditionalist sport, and I feel like we're going to get this in football very soon. We've already seen it in the NBA.
Baseball's not a traditionalist sport anymore. They put a ghost runner on second base to start the 10th inning.
Stupid. People wanted us to adopt that in the Wiffle Ball League, and I quickly shut that crap down.
It comes back to the Wiffle Ball League.
It always seemingly does. But eventually they're going to start doing this with Steeler jerseys, and eventually they're going to start selling actual jerseys with probably advertising patches on it.
I'm going to order a Pirates jersey with a Sheetz patch on it.
This I is like Sheetz. I don't want to change Sheetz on my jersey.
Why not?
It's just a personal preference.
Well, my point is,
I go to Sheetz a lot. That doesn't mean I want it on my nice new Paul Skeens jersey.
My point is, if they could get six, like Joe said, if they could get six patches on their shirt, maybe they could end up buying a few players.
They'll bring in the next Rowdy Tellez if they get enough Sheetz patches. I honestly,
that's what I'm angry about.
I don't mind this, Paul.
No, I don't either.
Sports.
Listen, I wrote a column yesterday about the NCAA tournament. People, the guardians of basketball and everything, they're all losing their minds because they're talking about expanding to 72 or 78. And this is what I basically, the gist of my column is. I'm as old, crotchety, old man yelling at cloud as there is in anybody you know. You know that. I'm an old, crotchety guy.
Yeah.
I've long ago since basically come to peace with the fact that chasing money is going to be the way of sports. So stuff like this doesn't bother me. They try to find like the NCAA tournament. You know why they going to, six more teams or eight more teams? It ain't because they want to try and get Jeff Capel in the tournament. It's because it's going to generate more money. So in this thing with the Sheetz patch is the same thing. And we long ago knew this was inevitable. Was the NHL the first that started doing this? Right? Was the NHL the first of the four major sports that started putting patches on?
But it's always been on, soccer, right? Am I right about
soccer,
that?
Yeah.
And, NASCAR.
Yeah,
NASCAR,
that's what soccer jerseys are. It's the logo huge on the front.
NASCAR, soccer, golfers do it. I mean, at the end of the day.
Order Pirates jersey with Sheetz patch. I'm Googling this
now. The Pirates just put out there's a 30-second Pirates video.
This is great stuff.
That has just been tweeted out with the Sheetz logo. The Pirate Parrot is sewing on the Sheetz logo on the jersey.
By the way, game one of the 86 finals was 148-101, and the Lakers lost and then came back to win. But go ahead, Paul.
What I was saying was, you're going to be a lot happier of a person if you're a sports fan if you just embrace the fact that money will dictate every move that happens. I mean, we all love the purity of, or want to romanticize the purity of sport and all that stuff. But guess what? I'll tell you another thing that's hilarious to me. You see all these Penn State fans losing their minds because Fox, you know, has the rights now to Big Ten football. And basically Fox is going to put every one of their big games at noon.
Big snooze kickoff.
At noon. And so they can't have their whiteout because their only whiteout date, the only night game they have at home is against Illinois. And, well, you know, that's a waste of a whiteout. So now.
I agree with them on that.
What?
You got to have your big game be a whiteout. They've earned that.
Well, then do it. Then do your whiteout at noon.
You can't do a whiteout at noon. It's got to be a whiteout night out.
Okay, but the reality is, like I said, do Penn State fans like the fact that their team is in one of the two conferences that's definitely going to survive, that they get about $80 to $85 or $90 million a year from that conference? If they do, then, you know, somebody's got to pay for that.
I'll tell you what
else.
And
that somebody is Fox.
Yeah.
And so basically, Fox gets to dictate when your games are.
Well, NBC has a deal with the Big Ten as well. Why can't you have an Ohio State, Penn State, Big Ten Saturday night game on NBC and make that the whiteout?
It should be a night game.
100%.
It should be a night game.
But again.
They can have their cake and eat it too. They can have their money and have a night out whiteout too.
But again, the schedule is dictated by when.
And the schedule makers are stupid.
And what they didn't want to do, Joe, is go up against the premier SEC game on CBS. So they said, if we put this game at noon, everybody can watch Penn State, Ohio State, and Auburn or Alabama, LSU, or whatever. That's all. But that's the thing. It's dictated by somebody has got to pay for all these things. Somebody's got to pay for, you know, $10.5 million for Rawdus Chapman. These things don't just, the money just doesn't fall out of the sky.
Here's another thing. You can't put Hoop Dreams as the number one movie, sports movie of all time. It's a documentary. It's a documentary. So stop doing that. If you're, for example, Vulture Doc, and it was a great documentary. But if we're going to rank that, then we got to put in all the football lifes, all the 30 for 30s. You can't have that.
Yeah, you can't make the last dance.
It's not a sports movie.
Your favorite movie.
So the greatest sports movie ever is Rocky, the original. It's not even close. And another thing that ticks me off is that Million Dollar Baby gets in here. That movie sucked. I can't say sucked in an emphatic enough fashion. Did you see that one, Paul?
Yeah,
with
that's
Clint
not
Eastwood
good.
And Hilary Swank. And they've got this thing as the 11th best sports movie of all time. What?
Yeah.
Ahead of Field of Dreams? I have a feeling you hate Field of Dreams.
I hate
you?
That movie.
Yeah. Which part?
This thing is terrible. It's boring.
Isn't it a father and son story, though?
No,
he didn't cry at the end when he played catch?
Of course, because that's my favorite sports movie.
It's boring. It's terrible. It's cliched. It's awful. Who gives a rat's ass a bunch of baseball ghosts playing baseball in a cornfield? Who cares?
I like it when he walks out of the cornfield.
I like it, too.
Like a little Cornish hen.
I'll tell you what.
Like candy corn.
How do you not get
like
a tear in your
muffin.
Eye at the very end? You're not human if you
like
don't
corn
the first
beef
time
hash.
You watch it.
Yeah. Maybe I just like corn.
Wait.
I don't know. Children of the Corn. You ever see that one? The horror movie?
Who did you ask that? You ever seen Children of the Corn?
I forgot. Some caller.
Dr. Cornfetter.
Him, too. Dr. Corn. We should have Dr. Cornfetter's favorite five corn-related movies.
I think the Natural is a much better movie than Field of
Dreams. The Natural. I call
great.
You Ron, Dr. Dick. What should we go with
you
here?
You can call me Ron.
Paul, the five best movies related to corn with a C. Field of Paul is looking around like, what the hell is going on? Field of Dreams with the cornfield. Children of the Corn. And then I'm starting to run low. Anything else?
No, I don't think is that interesting enough to make too many movies about.
The movie Twister, isn't the movie Twister, aren't they driving through a cornfield in that final scene when
that
they're chasing
Twister.
When they're chasing the one tornado.
Oh my God. There's a website that says the top 10 films featuring corn as a key plot element. Are you ready for this, City Limits?
Also, Children of the Corn got a 1.6 audience rating.
No, that's one of those movies that's so bad. All right, Children of the Corn, 1984, takes place in a Nebraska town filled with cornfields. Field of Dreams. Signs. In this sci-fi thriller, a farmer named Graham, played by Mel Gibson, discovers a strange crop of corn, leading to an alien invasion. Did you know that, Paul?
No.
The Wicker Man, 1973. This British horror movie takes place on an isolated island where the residents worship a fertility goddess and practice pagan rituals in their cornfields. The corn serves as a symbol of fertility. Did you know that, Paul? Twister, you were right. That's the fifth best corn-related movie of all time.
Because I just remember that last scene.
Silkwood. We remember that one, right? It was Meryl Streep, correct? Paul, remember that one? Silkwood, 1983, the year I graduated from high school. She worked at a nuclear plant, Karen Silkwood, and was subsequently poisoned, and the film's final scene takes place in a cornfield where her car is found abandoned after she disappears. How about that?
Yeah.
The Corn is Green from 1945. Betty Davis is a school teacher in a Welsh mining town who discovers a talented young student who dreams of going to Oxford. And cornfields, very, very prevalent in that one. There you go. The best corn-related movies of all time.
Here you go, City Limits. Well, that's absolutely incredible that you found that list and that there are actually 10 movies that have... Oh, my God. City Limits, there you go. There's a photo now out with Brian Reynolds.
Now I see it.
Jared Jones.
Yep. And where?
Some younger players from the RBI program displaying the new Sheets patch jerseys.
And it honestly is not that big of a patch, which is nice because some of the patches on jerseys are like ginormous.
You're starting to soften on your stance because you know more are coming. They're going to every jersey's going to be patch filled.
I still don't like it, but
because of what Paul says.
I think the good thing is that, I mean, you go to, like, team stores, and it doesn't seem like the patches are on the jerseys.
Yeah.
So I guess that might be the silver lining. Still don't like it.
The Noah Constrictor has a photo on his little Twitter feed as well. Noah Hiles. There it is. There they are. There they're all sitting.
Yes.
Do you like it? You can't even see it. It's just a little thing on the sleeve.
Right. That's the point. It's not that big.
Yeah, I like it.
Looks like they're going to have a press conference, and Bob Nutting is also in attendance.
Yeah, there he is. There he is.
First question should be, Bob, does this mean that you're going to have enough money to go out and buy guys?
Pete Alonso coming next?
You know that question's coming. You know it's coming. Anything else? Where were we? What were we talking about before all of this?
Anger Management Friday.
Yeah, Anger Management Friday. I thought that worked out well as a first segment. You guys, Paul?
Yes, but we still have a few more cliches to get to.
Paul Skeens to fit in the Sheets brand. That doesn't make any sense. Some of the jokes people have about this Sheets stuff. Anyway, give us a call if you have, if you agree with City Limits that you're a traditionalist.
Let's do one. I think we should do one more of the cliche discussed topics.
Yeah, which one? How about was Joe Flacco elite?
No, that's boring.
Tomlin versus Cowher.
Yeah, let's do that.
Want to do that now?
Yeah, go ahead. Start, City Limits. Tomlin versus Cowher.
The notion that Tomlin won with all of Cowher's players in the Super Bowl. He also went back to the Super Bowl a couple years later. I'm not trying to put this out here as the big defense of Tomlin. That is not the main goal here. When comparing the two, Tomlin had, for the majority of his career until the last couple of years, Ben Roethlisberger in his prime, arguably the best quarterback in franchise history, especially in the modern game where throwing the football was so much more important and a key element compared to the 70s. And Cowher was never able to get that main guy, Cordell Stewart, I guess, for a little bit.
Which is exactly why Cowher has a clear edge here.
I agree.
He has a clear edge. First of all, He has a winning playoff record, 12-9. Second of all, he got to a Super Bowl without Ben. He got to a bunch of AFC title games without Ben. Tomlin had the clear advantage of a franchise quarterback in his prime, plus probably more talent on offense overall, and couldn't get it done. I mean, he did get it done, but couldn't get it done to the point where he has a winning playoff record and has a more impressive resume than Cowher. He doesn't. He has a worse one because of his playoff record.
Could not sniff the Super Bowl, partly because they were injured in that one game, but they never made it. And, I mean, all the AFC Championship games that Cowher even went to, more than...
I think Cowher has a clear
more
edge,
more than Tomlin.
You?
I think that there is no dumber argument than the one about Tomlin winning with Cowher's players, because Tomlin indeed did win with Cowher's players. Now, he coached them, and that's great. But then always the defense is, well, Cowher didn't even win with Cowher's players. Actually, he did. So let's review real quickly, because I'm going to agree with what you're saying, Joe. But here's what, let's review exactly what we're saying here. 2004, Ben Roethlisberger's first year, they went, 15-1, 16-1, or whatever it was, and lost to one of the greatest dynasties of all time in the AFC title game.
And they cheated in that game.
Well, whatever. Have. Either way, my point is they basically got as far as they were going to get that year. They were clearly the second-best team in football. The next year, they won the Super Bowl. After they won the Super Bowl, Ben did the, you know, thing where he was driving his motorcycle or whatever happened in the South Side, or actually on 2nd Avenue, and had a really pretty bad accident. Then he tried to come back and he had appendicitis. Remember, right before the
opener.
So for the first six games, they were bad.
And a concussion.
Yes, because he was bad. He wasn't right. Then all of a sudden he got healthy, and you know what? I usually hate this when people say this, but if they'd have gotten to the playoffs that year, they would have been a problem. But they were 6-2 down the stretch, you know, whatever.
Came back down the stretch and went 8-8. People want to give Tomlin a statues for that. That was a hell of an accomplishment.
It was, but my point is, Cowher won with those guys.
Yeah.
When he finally got Ben Roethlisberger, he had Ben Roethlisberger for 3 years. He got to the AFC title game 1 year. He won the Super Bowl, and then the next year he had a really banged up, injured Ben Roethlisberger for the first 6-8 weeks, whatever. And if you look at Roethlisberger, a lot of the interceptions he threw that year were early in the season, and then he, you know, whatever. So Tomlin did win with Cowher's players. It's okay to say that, and you're not trying to diminish, right? When the Cowher's team, when that defense finally went away, there was a lot of years of mediocrity. That's number one. I have to get that off my chest. Number two, Cowher didn't have Ben Roethlisberger for 15 or 16 years. He won with O'Donnell, you know, Bubby was it? I think Bubby was his first quarterback. O'Donnell, Cordell Stewart, Tom Zach.
Maddox.
Tommy Maddox. You know what I mean? And he had guys like Scott Miller, Kent Graham. I mean, what are we talking about here?
There's really not much of a comparison,
and, honestly, in the end. And then the third thing. How many times did Bill Cowher go 7 years without winning a playoff game? Oh, that's right. Never. How many times did Cowher go 5 years without winning a playoff game? Oh, that's right. Never.
And believe me, I give Tomlin 100% credit for winning a Super Bowl and getting to a Super Bowl with that group. You know, Cowher had Chuck Knoll's players too. A lot of those guys were keys to his teams.
But I'll also
give George Seifert enormous credit for winning with Bill Walsh. You have to win, man. And Tomlin did that. But in the end, his resume and Cowher's, there's just obvious differences that tilted toward Cowher.
And then there's the most important thing. They're regular season winning percentage is almost identical. I think Tomlin is .623, Cowher is .614 or something. Like they're, you know, okay. but Joe said it. One guy has a winning record in the playoffs. The other guy has a losing record in the playoffs. So honestly, I don't even think it's an argument. I think it's very clear that Cowher was better than Tomlin, at least to this point in Tomlin's career. And that's not to say that Tomlin's bad. I think he's done a really good job. It's not, you know, being a Tomlin hater and all that stuff. But I just think that really, realistically, if you think about it that way, I think that Tomlin is a guy who has had a lot of things break his way to be the Steelers coach. And I don't know that he's done enough with it.
Does that satisfy you, City Limits?
Yeah, I mean, I have a lot of the same thoughts and the same arguments, and playoff success is a big part of it. And I mean, I just think the whole notion of he won with certain players. I mean, a coach got to win regardless of who his players are and who maybe he inherited.
Yeah, he gets 100% credit. He was an A plus for four years or so.
Yeah,
Tomlin A plus. Since then, it's been about a C to a C minus.
Here's a great question for you, Joe. If George Seifert never took the Carolina job, would he be a Hall of Famer?
Is he in the Hall of Fame?
No, I don't think he is.
He should be. No, he absolutely should be. But yeah, that's a good question.
Wait, I don't think he is.
And people want to, in certain instances, detract from your other places. Like Marv Levy was horrible in Kansas City. Jimmy Johnson wasn't great in Miami. But in the end, what does that matter?
My point is, if you look at it, he has 766 winning percentage.
No, he should be in the Hall of Fame.
With two Super Bowls in 2, 4, 6, 8 years, he won two Super Bowls.
Right.
And
why isn't he in the Hall of Fame?
He got to the NFC Championship game three other times. So in 8 seasons, he was in the NFC Championship game 5 times. He won 2 of them and won 2 Super Bowls. And oh, by the way, the two of the teams he lost to were those two Jimmy Johnson Cowboy teams, which are two of the best teams of all time.
Yeah, and the other one was Lawrence Taylor
and
the Giants that went on to beat the Bills. It's one of the great runs in the history of the league, and the guy's not in the Hall of Fame. They're holding against him what they want to blow off when it comes to Tomlin.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? And I think both of them deserve 100% credit. I don't care whose players you inherit. You got to win.
And so here's the other thing. You know, 6 seasons into Seifert, you know, he won the Super Bowl his first year. Okay, you want to tell me that was Walsh's team? Fine. But 6 seasons later, how much of the roster turned over in 6 seasons?
Right, including he had a different quarterback.
But if you look at what he did in Carolina, everybody that needed validation, right, to say, oh, well, he was just somebody who was a product of Bill Walsh's players and system, you know, they got it because Carolina was horrific when he was there. But, you know, I don't know all the ins and outs of the personnel and all that other stuff. All I'm telling you is I look at George Seifert's first 8 years and I'm like, this guy should be in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, I mean, even the years that he lost in the divisional playoffs, he lost to Brett Favre both times. And both times, or at least one of those times, he won a playoff game.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first 3 orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Before that. You belong. All right, this Nedeljkovic signing is very, very interesting to me. And we have to rewind for a minute. We got to go back to Jari. And I compare it to Kenny Pickett. You're the guy until you're not the guy, and the coach's actions will tell you what he thinks. Mike Tomlin with Kenny Pickett, it seemed like they would, you know, he would go to the mat for Kenny Pickett. for anything. And then everything changed. And then Mason Rudolph beat the broken Cincinnati Bengals. They were a horrible team when Mason beat them. And then Kenny was healthy for Seattle, and he didn't play. And that was the beginning of the end. Why? Because Tomlin didn't believe in him anymore. Didn't think he was good enough. Didn't think he was the guy. You had a healthy quarterback, premium position, ready to go in your biggest game of the year, and Tomlin didn't play him. End of story. And now Kenny Pickett lives in Philadelphia. To me, Paul, the same thing happened with Tristan Jarry last year. You mentioned it. Nedeljkovic was really good for a while. He helped the Penguins go on that streak and get back in it.
Right.
They needed everybody else to lose, of course. Then he went on a stretch where he allowed 15 goals in four games. His save percentage was .854 in games they needed to win. He was terrible.
Right.
Jarry was ready to play. And when it came for their next game, must win, guess who was in goal? Not Jarry. So that tells me that Tomlin is to Pickett as Sullivan is to Jarry. His actions told us that. It's over. And why would he believe in him? The guy's next big win for the Penguins will be his first. He's done nothing in the clutch. So I think that bringing back Nedeljkovic either means they're going to pair a cheaper veteran with him, or they're going to bring up Blomqvist and pair those two together. I think this could very well mean, and in my opinion, should absolutely mean the end of Tristan Jarry. Get rid of the salary, get rid of the player, and go with these guys. Thoughts?
Yeah. I mean, is that what you think? If that is the plan, I'm okay with it. Then I would retract my rant about, I won't, because my overall rant is I just don't feel like they're going to do anything.
You might be right.
I don't feel like they're going to do anything significant in this offseason. So if they're not going to do anything significant this offseason, it's more of the same. And if it's more of the same, then what are we talking about here?
But I would argue that last offseason was definitely not more of the same. I mean, he went out and made the biggest move in the league last offseason, one of the biggest moves in Penguins history, by bringing in a reigning Norris Trophy winner. Plus, he brought in Riley Smith and basically a whole new three for your bottom six there. So he tried last offseason. I'm not saying he succeeded by any means. I thought that Dubas came in and tried to, did some pretty earth-shaking stuff, one of which was to sign Jarry, which is in keeping with your theme of no change at that position. I think this offseason it might be his only route toward making significant change, because he's hung up on a lot of these contracts. These guys have no movement clauses.
Right.
You got to be creative. There's always a way. And one way to create a little space and to create some sort of shakeup is to get rid of this guy. And it's time. It's time. Somebody out there, it's a goalie starved league. I don't think he's 30 yet. If he is, he just turned 30. He's 29. Led the league in shutouts. He's had some good numbers. He's got a good one loss record, 136-85. Somebody out there would pay for Tristan. You could even keep $1 million, retain $1 million of his salary. This is the time. I think this might be, and I definitely think it should be, the end of him.
Mm-hmm. I would absolutely agree with that. No question about it, I would agree with that.
And then maybe you can move a guy like Raquel and his salary.
That's what I was going to say. Raquel, I'm looking at their salaries right now.
I don't think you get a taker on Graves, but then again, I never thought somebody would take Mikhail Granlund or Petrie or anybody like that.
Well, I mean, if you wanted to free up money.
It's tough, man.
Somebody will take Riley Smith.
Oh, yeah. Riley Smith right now you could trade, and there are absolutely people out there who would take him. 50-minute mark on the Fan brought
to
you.
Can I ask you a question real quick?
Yeah.
How much of Carlson's money do they have to pay this year? Is it increase every year, or is San Jose or whoever, it was San Jose, right? They traded.
Yeah, my remembrance on that.
Are they retaining X amount of dollars every year?
That's my thought. Can you look that up, please?
On the case.
He's on the case. He actually looks like, in some ways, a Jim Carrey from Ace Ventura Pet Detective. Look at him, Paul. Look at the hairstyle.
Yes.
He's on the case here. 50-minute mark on the Fan, brought to you by South Hills Chrysler Jeep Dodge, Route 19, Peters Township, celebrating 50 years in the South Hills. Listen to this show every Wednesday to hear about Starkey's Card of the Week from the Baseball Card Castle and Cranberry Contest. Run every Wednesday through Friday at noon at the 93.7thefan.com contesting page. You have a Paul Skeens autographed card that you could have a chance to get by doing that. So that's where I'm at with Nedeljkovic. Now, somebody may counter with, okay, so who's your number one goalie if it's Nedeljkovic and Blomqvist? And that's a fair question. I'm not sure that Nedeljkovic is a starter in the NHL.
And that is my point. And so you've got – here you go, Joe. Let's do this real quick.
Also, San Jose is retaining $1.5 million annually of the deal.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
It's not a lot.
Yeah,
it's
not a
lot
every year.
So they're basically paying...
They're paying him like $10
million. $10 million a year. Okay, so here you go, Joe.
Yes?
I was trying to figure out here. The Penguins have a ton of free agents after this season. Like, after this season, there's going to be all kinds of guys they can, you know, kind of get out from underneath.
Right.
But this season, there ain't a ton. There's not a ton. I mean, they don't have a lot of room to move around, to move around. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like I said, they're going to have to get very creative. But there's always a way. Always a way to get
so
out of
if
these
you, Here's the thing. If you trade Jari, I'm trying to think of who else here might make a little bit of sense to trade.
My question is, who wouldn't make sense to trade? You know, I would approach Carlson and try and deal him.
Well, if you could deal Carlson, then that solves a whole lot.
Except you don't have him.
How about Raquel, maybe?
Maybe Raquel at $5 million.
If you got rid of him and Jari, that would free up $10 million. And then if you got rid of Carlson, now you free up 20. So you got basically $20 million there to really make some significant changes.
And I know the thought on Carlson was Ottawa, where he still has, you know, really important, meaningful ties. But that would require him to waive that no movement clause. And that's not always easy to do. I wish they could, and they could, if they wanted, approach Malkin. But I think that those three, the big three, Crosby, Malkin, Letang, I think that's just they're together till the bitter end here, right?
Yeah. I think all three of them. That's why I didn't even visit that, because we know that.
Yeah, I think that's flat out happening. Ray Fittipaldo coming up next. Let's ask him about Brandon Ayuk, about everything Steelers.